K-Mud Podcast presents.
Are you there, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for being on the show. It's kind of funky because you're like over on the sidebar, but nobody else knows that but you and me. So thanks for being here with me.
I'm happy to be here.
So if y'all don't remember, Kevin is a local citizen entomologist who spends his time supporting the natural wildlife in our community and speaking up for the little guys.
That's right. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah. So today go ahead. You go.
Yeah, insects need more representation, and that's what I'm here to give them.
Yeah, I learned recently that insects don't have any laws to protect them. Like, I mean, if there's endangered species and stuff, that may be a thing. But, I mean, you can do anything in a science capacity to an insect. Like, there are rules and regulations about other animals, but not insects, and that's just not right.
Yeah.
That's my two cents on that.
Yeah, especially when it comes to our agriculture.
Absolutely.
Our agriculture system is really harsh when it comes to insects.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. So much we could talk about on that subject. Let's spend today on a happier note.
There's a million things we can do to support insects.
Yes.
Just for the same reason there's a million things working against them. Every little thing we do can also support them.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're right. So tell me a little bit about what you've been up to and this magic... signature species of yours?
Oh, well, as always, I love exploring this world and seeing. We know of over a million insect species, and so my life is always discovering new ones. In California, we have over 1,600 species of bees, and the only education most people have is on the European honeybee, and I think that's kind of a travesty. As far as working on our beaches, because I love our beaches to death. I spend a lot of time at Friends of the Dunes, and they mentioned to me about a species of bee called the silver bee. And when I looked into it, they have a really an amazing story to tell. The silver bee, it's a West Coast bee, so it only lives on the beaches of California, Oregon, and Washington. It's a solitary bee, so they live independently. They dig their burrows in the sand, as most bees do. And they have a history of struggling on our beaches due to invasive species. Specifically, they have a history in San Francisco, because San Francisco lost their population due to habitat loss. But here in Humboldt County, we have a lot of programs to maintain and restore our ecosystems and our beaches. And I was pleasantly surprised when I found them here. So they're really my motivational species to motivate me to want to maintain and restore our habitat here in Humboldt County.
Awesome. Okay, I have some questions.
Yeah.
One, well, can you describe a silver bee and can it sting you?
So silver bees are about the size of a honeybee, maybe a little bit larger. They're all black, and they have a few white hairs on them, so they kind of look like they're old. Can they sting you? If you're stung by anything, it's female. Okay, so a stinger is a female reproductive organ. Males can't sting you. Like I said, there's 1,600 species of bees in California, and most of them are independent. And when you're a single mother with a brood at home to take care of, you're not going to go around picking fights, because you have you have kids at home that are depending on you to come back and feed and raise them. So these are one of those bees that are single mothers. They don't want anything to do with you. They're going to run from a fight, and their primary motivation is to raise their brood at home, not go out and be aggressive. The aggression that most people are familiar with stems from their education of honeybees, the European honeybee. When you have a colonizing species like that, with many individuals to back you up, that's where you grow aggression, because you can be replaced. But when you're independent living, you don't have a replacement. So these are one of those single mothers.
That's awesome. Okay, so my next question is, what kind of habitat loss led these bees to possibly be missing completely from San Francisco? Is there like an invasive grass that they can't like dig in the sand, or what's going on?
Well, as a Californian, a native Californian, I grew up with the wrong idea of what our beaches are supposed to look like because how many invasive species are present on our beaches. I found out that the very first sin that white people did when they made it to the West Coast was they planted European dune grass that they brought over from Europe. I knew it as beach grass. It's everywhere. It's almost encompasses the entire beach. We planted that, and there were even historical campaigns to plant it because the mistake we made was we wanted to control the sand dunes, and we didn't like that the sand was shifting and that it was blowing into our towns. So we planted this grass so the dunes would stop moving, and it worked. The dunes stopped moving. And they got completely covered in this European beach grass, which is habitat loss. I get asked a lot about insect population decline, and I find that the root cause of that is habitat loss. But the first thing that I thought of when I thought of habitat loss is a giant monster of a problem. How could I possibly tackle that issue as an individual person? I think of habitat loss as agriculture, monoculture agriculture, expansion of cities and towns, monoculture timber industries, things that are bigger than me. But what I realized and discovered is that habitat loss is everywhere, especially when it comes to our invasive species. When an invasive species takes hold, it takes that habitat away from native species that want to grow and flourish there. And I found that that's a big issue on our beaches. A lot of all pretty much all you see is European beach grass, ice plant, and lupin. And that can change. That's something we can fix.
You're talking about a yellow lupin, right?
That's correct. Yellow lupin is native to Southern California, not Northern California.
Because where I live, a little inland, there is a purple lupin, and that one's totally native, but you wouldn't even find it on the beach, right?
It is, and it's in full bloom right now. It's absolutely gorgeous. I recently took a trip up Bald Hills Road to see the purple lupin bloom.
Right on. Awesome. Beautiful place. I had so many bee questions, and I want to make sure that we don't spend the whole time talking bees and forget to mention more about the restoration work you've been doing. Is there anything more about silver bees that we should know? Like perhaps what can people do if they come across a silver bee when they're at the beach? Should they like try to give it a wide berth? Should they tell their friends, check it out, but like don't touch? Or what do you think?
Well, because silver bees live in the ground and they live independently, they're very zippy. I would call them a zippy bee.
Okay.
So if you're not looking for them, you might miss them. They do live in the ground, and silver bees are quite prevalent in our area.
What do they eat if they're still looking for pollen the way other bees do?
Ants and wasps share a similar ancestry. Wasps came first, and then later on in history, a group of wasps decided to go vegetarian and grow their hair out. They became
They
bees.
became
Okay.
hippies.
So bees are just hippie wasps. That's right. And silver bees are one of those hippie wasps. You don't have anything to fear, but what you should look out for is holes in the ground under your feet. They're everywhere. Because they live in the ground, it's going to be very easy to step on. So if you're going to look for anything, look at your toes and make sure that what you're stepping on isn't somebody's home.
Awesome. Thank you. That's great advice everywhere we go, right? That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the work that you've been doing with Friends of the Dunes and also independently and how that came about.
So when I discussed this first with Friends of the Dunes, they mentioned the silver bees to me, and I was walking along the trail after this conversation, I found them. But when I found them, I saw that the native flowers that they were feeding on were being overshadowed by what is known as greater quaking grass. I know it as rattlesnake grass. It's from Africa. Okay, it's not supposed to be here. And on the tips of these grass are seed pods that resemble rattles on a rattlesnake.
Yeah, totally.
Now, why I understood this is a problem, you have to understand a little bit about how an insect works. See, most insects, including these bees, have three eyes on top of their head. They're called simple eyes, and they're staring at the sun and the moon all day and all night for three reasons. They use it for navigation. It's their GPS system. Insects are connected to the stars, okay? They also use it for orientation. The brightest light source is always supposed to come from above your head, and darkness is always supposed to come from below your feet. This is also why light pollution is so bad at night, okay? Those three eyes, if you watch an insect circle an artificial light source at night, which it's very easy to outshine the moon, those insects that are circling the light, if you look closely, the back of their head where those oculi are, they're always pointed at that light source. They're actually oriented correctly. They're just lost. You're distorting their GPS system. And the last reason is for predator avoidance, okay? If an insect, if that light source is suddenly broken, what that means is there's a bird and it's about to eat you, okay? Insects are afraid of shadows. And what this grass was doing is it was casting erratic shadows over the native flowers. And that was causing the bees to flee. And when I saw that, that was what inspired me to want to pull out this invasive African rattlesnake grass. I saw a problem and I knew how to fix it. It was a really simple solution. So when that happened, I went back to my friends at Friends of the Dunes, explained it to them and told them why I wanted to remove this invasive species. And they were very supportive. And I worked with them. I put in, I logged 220 hours removing as much of this grass as I could.
Wow.
My goal was to from the trailhead behind the visitor center, I didn't want to see any more African rattlesnake grass. And after 220 hours, I think I accomplished that goal. Although,
Congratulations.
It will be an ongoing project.
That's okay. Yeah. So just really quick, because I don't want to dwell on this because there's so much to say, but when you pull out a non-native and you know it's going to have seed or it already has seed, do you like, how do you take care of it in a safe way? And do you have to use plastic to do that?
Well, if you remove an invasive species like this or European dune grass, there is a chance that it's going to come back. There's a high chance it's going to come back. So you're going to have to go back and retreat an area several times, if not an ongoing effort. This is going to be an ongoing effort intergenerationally, not just with us. It's not something we're going to see in our lifetime. We have to continually work on this. So disposal of the green waste, there's good practices and there's best practices and they're the best practices.
Okay.
Whatever practice you do is going to get us in the right direction.
Good point.
So the best practice is like prescribed burning. Okay. Once you pile up the green waste, the best thing to do is to burn it so that the seed is removed. But there's plenty of other ways to dispose of this green waste as well. It's really a project by project decision.
Awesome. Okay. So you worked with Friends of the Dunes, but then you also had another project. Am I right?
Yeah. So not only did I see silver bees at their location, there was a second location that I thought was absolutely gorgeous and has a very high value for our ecosystem. It's at the mouth of the Mad River. There's a pullout on the 101 called the Overlook. And if you go down the Hammond Trail that's connected to it, down to the south end of Clam Beach, I saw a hillside. What could be a pristine hillside that the silver bees were on. But it was being encroached upon by, this time it was the European dune grass. And I wanted, because I know that hillsides are important to ground nesting bees. And so I wanted to pull that grass. And that led me to ask myself, what do I need to do to remove this stuff? And that's kind of what I want to talk about today, my process of discovery. And when I looked into it, I asked, what do I need to remove an invasive species? And I found that all you need is permission from the landowner. When I started, I thought I must need some scientific degree. I need to have like some sort of surveys or all these steps in my mind that I thought were obstacles to me doing it. But when I looked into it, it was as simple as having permission from the landowner.
Hooray.
Yeah. And in this case, I found out, as in a lot of cases, the land was owned by the county of Humboldt. And so that led me to say, okay, I went to the county of Humboldt's Natural Resources Division, which the office is in Eureka. And I came across the person that you need to get a hold of. Her name is Danith Davis. And she was so helpful with working me through this process. And she wants everybody to know that if you want to start your own program, or not a program, or a project, a personal project, like mine, I consider was a personal project. It just affects all of us because it's our community space.
Yeah.
You can reach out to her. Her number is 707-268-2692. And I worked with her when I asked her about this land, and she came back to me with four very simple questions for me to start this project. And those four questions that I came across were, she wanted a map. She wanted me to map out the area I wanted to take care of. That was really simple. All I did was take a Google Maps screenshot, and I highlighted the area real quick.
Nice.
The second question was, she wanted to know what tools I was going to use. So I said, I'm going to use this right hand and this left hand right here. I'm going to pull it out of the ground with them. She says, that's wonderful. And the third question was, she was asking what you just asked me. How do you plan on disposing of the green waste once you pull it? Now, this is what I thought was, well, initially I told her my plan is to put it in piles and watch it wither away. Okay, because it's better to see an invasive plant dying in a pile than growing in
Yes.
our beautiful beaches. And she says, you know what? Let me make a phone call. So she made a phone call, and she wanted me to make sure to thank the who is it? The Parks Department, our native our local Parks Department, Humboldt County Parks, because they worked with her in the disposal. They agreed to come and pick up the green waste after I was done.
What?
So
That's
all I had
awesome.
to do was put it in a pile by the Hammond Trail. And after I was done, they picked it up for me. So big shout out to our entire government for coming together and working with me on this. And the last question she asked was, she just wanted to know how long it was going to take me. They just wanted you to have a general time frame so that they know when you're going to be there and how often you're going to be there. Answering those questions took me about 10 minutes. And that was it. The whole project started from there. I got the permission and I just started pulling grass, which seemed like way fewer steps than I was anticipating. It was a really positive experience.
That's wonderful. So, do you ever come across other people who are like, what are you doing here? And you get a chance to just educate on the fly?
Yes, all, and that was so wonderful, the whole process while I was out there, especially on the south end of Clam Beach on my personal project. I had people asking me, what are you doing? And I got to tell them all about, I got a permit. You wouldn't believe how easy it was. This is an invasive species. A lot of people didn't realize that it was an invasive species because there's so much of it
Yeah.
that once the veil is lifted from your eyes, it's terrifying. It's all around us, and it makes you want to do something about it. And that's what I really want to thank you for the time
Oh,
so that I
yeah,
can
thank
share
you.
with everybody else. Because I feel like I'm not the only one that has these feelings. And I want to help you help other people navigate their own projects. A lot of people will feel connected with areas that are closer to their home or somewhere that means something to them. And you can make your own projects in these areas.
That is so exciting.
And one really inspirational thing I saw was once the community that I was talking with was seeing what I was doing. They started picking up trash and piling it next to my pile. Everybody started cleaning up the beach. It was awesome. It
Oh, I
was
love that.
really cool.
That is
Yeah.
so cool. So here in the King Range, the BLM office will hand stickers out to folks who have hiked the Lost Coast Trail and brought trash back to prove that they didn't leave it on the beach. They get a special sticker that you can only get if you've been picking up trash on the Lost Coast. So I want to shout out to our local BLM for encouraging people to pick up trash because I love going in to say hi to them and see folks showing up with license plates from all over the country and picking up trash. And I'm like, thank you so much. This is so important that we all do our part. If you see it and you can make it better instantly, why not do it?
Yeah, so that's just another reason to reach out to your county, your city, the state. Those are the institutions or the government entities that you want to contact if you want to do projects like this. It's really easy to find them too.
That's wonderful. Yeah, my brain just started rolling when you started talking about this. I'm like, I can think of projects right now. Like when before this show, we talked about how much it would be fun to get groups together to pull English ivy on, in parks and also in if we get permission from landowners. I'm sure not everybody realizes that the beautiful looking ivy climbing up their redwood is actually going to kill it and pull it down. So,
Yeah.
that's a project I'd love to work on, but I also want to make sure because we're talking about insects today that we mentioned something that maybe you've heard of this phenomena. It's called No Mow May, and it's a request to the general public to please let me discourage you from mowing your lawn until after May so that the little animals living in the soil and living on that grass get a chance to finish their life cycle before you mow them down.
That's right. We're impacting insect populations with everything that we do. What when it's driving in our cars or mowing our grass, and big or little, if we do good or however we impact them, we can do something to help with everything we do in our lives.
Yeah, and if you don't like not mowing your lawn, pull it out and plant native flowers instead, and then you don't have to mow anything.
Or landscape your yard so that you don't have a lawn because, only grow the grass in areas that you'll utilize. I know that, maybe you have kids that want to play in the grass, but do they really need that big of a yard? I'm all for you can when I have a lawn, it's going to be full of flowers. It's going to be full of native flowers because to me inviting life into my space is what rewards me the most. So
Absolutely.
I would opt for planting native plants instead of having a lawn.
Yeah, I agree.
I think those properties look even better.
So we're going to run out of time really fast, but I would like to have you remind us what we can do so that we're not discouraging all those moths and animals from coming straight at our lights at night.
Okay, so insects, they get that light source is from the sun. The sun gives its light to them. And this light is a high frequency light, okay? So insects are attracted to high frequency light. They're much, much less interested in low frequency light, the kind of light that comes from fires, okay? Insects don't want to fly into fires. So if you have a light source that you want to use around your house, the one mistake people make is they use a high frequency light and they put it right by their front door. You're inviting them into your house. It's not their fault. They don't want to come inside. You're kind of tricking them. So if you don't want insects in your house, you can replace those lights. We can choose what kind of light comes out of our light bulbs. And the lower frequency that light produces, the less insects you're going to have. And that's a way you can understand the world and use that knowledge to create the environment you want. So whether you want to see insects or you don't want to see insects.
So a low frequency light would be like a green light instead of a white light. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, low frequency light goes into the yellow and red spectrum.
Okay.
So those are going to be the best spectrums of light you can use. I also discussed the light's always supposed to come from the sky. Okay. So once you understand that, you can understand not projecting the light up, having a cap on your light so that light's always projected down.
Awesome.
That also gives insects that are circling that light source a chance to break the cycle. Because once they go and circle above that cap, they're going to realize that's not the moon. And they're going to be able to fly off.
Awesome.
So give them a chance to fly off.
Okay, Kevin, we're running out of time. So can you tell people how they can learn more about you and what you're up to? And then I'm going to have to turn to the CSAR.
Okay, you can learn more about me if you simply just look up my name, Kevin Huntley. If you are interested, I have the largest insect collection of Humboldt species. I have over 400 species, and it's my mission to share them with our community. If you have a group or an institution or you want me to come out and speak, shoot me a message. My number is 916-753-4111.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kevin. I'm going to see later on if we can talk about maybe getting you at the K-Mud block party. That would be fun. But I have to let you go for now. So you mull over that idea and see if that's something you are interested in. I'll get back to you on that. And thank you again for being on the show. I absolutely respect you so much and all that you're doing for the little people in our lives that don't speak our language.
Absolutely. You know, and the response I've gotten from this community, from our community, it just fills my heart. And one impact that people have noticed is how quickly I made a change. That second project only took me 30 hours and I cleared out about a half mile stretch.
Wow.
People told me they were impressed by how quickly they saw a change. And we can all make this quick change. It does not take a lot to make a big difference.
Oh, you amaze me. Thank you so much for your time today. Let's do this again sometime soon, okay?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Take care. See you next time.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.